athletic competition. It can easily be broken down into two parts: the minutes or hours it takes to complete the event, then weeks, months, and years of joy or heartbreak. Finally, the decades to analyze and debate it. From the press box to press row, Donald Ware will break it all down for you with an in-depth look at historically black college athletics, as well as the biggest news stories and newsmakers of the day. It's time to talk the talk with those who walk the walk. From the press box to press row, here's your host, Donald Ware.
I think very deeply.
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
I think very deeply.
As I look at the HBCU schedule for week two, not a lot of intriguing games, but there is a game that I think has the potential, will be the HBCU national game of the week, but not a lot of great matchups in week two of HBCU football. Thank you for joining me on another edition of Box to Row. I am your host, Donald Ware. Unlike last week, where you had some really intriguing matchups and some good football games, that Florida A&M and South Carolina State game was a good football game. It was a game, it was for the taking for South Carolina State. The Chenis Berry era has begun in Orangeburg, South Carolina. And look, South Carolina State no doubt was an underdog in that football game, I think because for a couple of reasons. One, on the road in Tallahassee. Two, with Florida A&M being the defending HBCU national champs. And give all the credit in the world to Florida A&M, to that offense, James Colsey, the head coach. I mean, they're really getting it done. The quarterback, Daniel. I mean, you talk about pulling one out. And as a matter of fact, in the fourth quarter at that, and to be able to win that football game, certainly it was at home. But, I mean, Daniel Richardson has been absolutely spectacular through 2 weeks of football. Has not thrown an interception, has five passing touchdowns in 2 weeks. He's done a fantastic job. Look, that was a game, you know, Chenis Berry on the coach's call on Monday, on the MEAC coach's call on Monday, didn't seem very, you know, didn't really seem very disappointed in that game. I mean, look, you've got Eric Phoenix, who played at Benedict a couple of years ago as his quarterback. He's got his running back, Duhart. Both of those guys had good games. But look, that was a game for the taking. By the way, Florida A&M had already had a game under its belt as well. So for South Carolina State to come out to play well, look, that's an old SIAC rivalry game, an old MEAC rivalry game. And now both teams in different conferences, with Florida A&M now in the SWAC, South Carolina State still in the MEAC. Good football game, one in which got away from South Carolina State. But you know what it tells me? And, you know, I go back a couple of weeks ago. That's back-to-back wins for Florida A&M against MEAC opponents. And Norfolk State, you talk about Florida A&M, another come-from-behind victory, right? Had to come from behind to defeat Norfolk State a couple of weeks ago. But it tells me that the MEAC's going to be better this year. Look at Morgan State. I had a chance to be at the Morgan State and Hampton game in Hampton, Virginia. That was a good win for the Bears. Not only that, but now in back-to-back seasons, the Bears have won their first games of the season. Last year, the victory against Richmond. So you had, you know, you had some really intriguing games. But again, I think when I look at the MEAC, I mean, a victory by Delaware State over Sacred Heart, I just think that the MEAC top to bottom is going to be much improved in 2024. I mean, some other games. I mean, look at Texas Southern, big win, maybe a bit of a surprising win over Prairie View A&M, right? No Andrew Boddy. Andrew Boddy now with Alabama State, and now, as a matter of fact, out for the season. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. But that's a big win for Texas Southern, a huge win. Chris Dishman is the head coach there at Texas Southern, former National Football League player, right? You had the North Carolina Central Alabama State game last week, the Orange Blossom Classic there in Miami Gardens, Florida. Good football game to watch, even with the rain delay. And look, the Eagles got up 21-0 in this football game. The Eagles blinked, and all of a sudden it was 21-14. But the Eagles defense did enough to keep Alabama State at bay when it counted the most. When Alabama State would pull to within one score, the Eagles would step up. To me, I picked Alabama State in that game. I picked Alabama State mostly just from a talent perspective. I just thought that Alabama State was more talented. But I'm going to tell you what, and I've had a chance to watch Jamari Taylor the last couple of years. I had a chance to call his game 2 years ago in Charlotte when North Carolina Central and A&T played in that Aggie Eagle rivalry. In that football game, look, you've got, you know, Mookie Collier has been a fixture at North Carolina Central for so many years at the running back position, and sometimes you just have to wait your turn. Well, now it's Jamari Taylor's turn. Okay, splendid in that football game. A couple of rushing touchdowns for Jamari Taylor, who, by the way, is the HBCU National Player of the Week, or one of the HBCU National Players of the Week, the running back for North Carolina Central. A couple of touchdowns, big win for the Eagles, right? But that's a big loss also. Speaking about Alabama State, that's a huge loss for Alabama State, not having Andrew Boddy. Andrew Boddy absolutely carved up the Eagles, especially with his legs. Now, had Andrew Boddy not gone down in this football game, it may have been a different football game, but it's certainly a different team offensively for sure with respect to the Hornets moving forward. Andrew Boddy, we saw him play the last couple of years. You saw what he was able to do last year with both his arms and his legs. He was spectacular. And now him being out, I mean, that's a huge blow for Alabama State, who, by the way, has a home game, as a matter of fact, against Miles. And Miles is no slouch. Like, Miles, you talk about Miles taking West Alabama to the brink, lost on a 20-yard field goal as time expired on the clock. That's a tough game. Isn't that a game last year? I can't remember if it was Miles or Tuskegee that defeated Alabama State last year. Alabama State's got its hands full with Miles. So you've got some interesting matchups for week two in HBCU football. You had some really good matchups in week one of HBCU football, and we've got plenty of HBCU football to talk about today on the program. Let me set the table for you. Gonna have a conversation, as a matter of fact, a replay of a conversation that we had with Green Bay Packers running back Emmanuel Wilson, and gonna replay that conversation on today's program. Emmanuel Wilson started his career with Johnson C. Smith with Coach Blunt as the coach in Charlotte there at Johnson C. Smith, moved on, played a couple of years at Fort Valley State with the running back guru, the head coach for Fort Valley State, or the running back coach guru, I should say, Sean Gibbs, played a couple of years there, signed as a free agent with the Packers. Last year was his first year. He showed some flashes. He was activated for the playoff game for the Packers and led the Packers in rushing in the preseason. And now no A.J. Dillon for the Packers. So now all of a sudden, Emmanuel Wilson moves up the depth chart and should get plenty of playing time and be more of an integral part of the running game for the Green Bay Packers. Going to talk with him about it. Emmanuel Wilson, one of our guests here today on Box to Row. Also joining us today here on Box to Row, big win for Vanderbilt. The Commodores with a big home win last Saturday against Virginia Tech. And Clark Lee is the head coach in his fourth season at Vanderbilt. He's going to join us today here on the program. Shouts out to our affiliate in Nashville, Radio Free Nashville, 107.1 on your FM dial. So a couple of guests lined up for you today here on the program as the Box to Row countdown to 20 continues. Going to replay a conversation. It's appropriate, I think, finally, and he should have been in the Washington, whether you want to call them the Redskins, the Washington football team, the Commanders. When he played, the name of the team was the Washington Redskins. Darryl Green finally going into the Hall of Fame. He's already in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Well, we had a chance to catch up with Darryl Green going back a couple of years ago. 8 years ago now, back in 2016, he joined us on the program. Going to replay part of that conversation today as part of Box to Rose countdown to 20. Look, you can participate here on the program. We're going to get you set for your game. Maybe you're listening to this program and getting ready for your college football game. Thank you again for making Box to Row a part of your day. You can participate on the program, whether you're tailgating, whatever you're doing in the stadium, whatever it may be. Hit me up via Twitter or X at Box to Row, BOXTOROW, or on Facebook, BOX2ROW. Still plenty more of the conversation. As I mentioned, Clark Lee, the head football coach at Vanderbilt, a replay of a conversation with Green Bay Packers running back Emmanuel Wilson on the program as well. And the NFL season opened up on Thursday night, a really good football game between the Chiefs and the Ravens, the Chiefs winning that game. We got a full slate of NFL games this weekend, including my Commanders at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So for me, the National Football League is back. Very much looking forward to the season. I thought Lamar Jackson was really good. Patrick Mahomes has weapons all over the place. I think that's the game we're going to see once again in the AFC Championship. And maybe it'll be different this time for Jackson. More of the program still to come. Keep it locked.
Selling on his bunk, trying to keep from crying. Boris in the golf, forgive us. We don't know what we do. Know what we just do. Outlaw, a lost cause. Calling on you. Calling on you. I'm a sinner.
Breadwinner.
Born sinners.
Only God can judge us. Will he forgive us?
Home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
BoxToRow.com is the website for all of your HBCU sports needs.
From the game of the week feature to interviews
to the latest news in the world of HBCU sports, BoxToRow.com has you covered.
Missed a week of From the Press Box to Press Row?
BoxToRow.com has all the archive shows. Don't forget to check out the All-American teams and weekly media coaches bowls.
From the Press Box to Press Row.
And BoxToRow.com, your HBCU sports leader.
We track down the names making news in sports. From the press box to press row, it's Donald Ware. From the press box to press row.
Green Bay Packers running back Emmanuel Wilson's in his second season with the Packers. Played his collegiate football at both Johnson C. Smith and Fort Valley State. Had a chance to catch up with him earlier in the week and just talk with him about his progression from both Johnson C. Smith and Fort Valley State to Green Bay.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What, you made the 53-man roster last year. You're second right now in terms of on the depth chart with the Packers. Let's talk about the preseason where you've been very productive, 160 yards rushing in three games, 4.3 yards per carry. Just talk about the production and, you know, how you're getting better during this preseason.
Really, it just starts in practice, you know, trying to attack each and every day, trying to learn a lot from the vets here as far as Josh and AJ. Also, it's just attacking and trying to stack days.
What about last year? You played sparingly, but when you played, you were effective. You averaged in excess of 6 yards per carry on last year. What did you, you know, was it more of a growing process, more of a learning process perhaps last year?
Yes, sir. Most definitely. Because, you know, coming from HBCU and coming to the league is totally different as players play more faster. So it's trying to learn the game really quickly as I could and try to execute when I was out there.
Can you speak to the business side of things? You make the last year, you make the 53-man roster, and then you were put on IR towards the end of the season, but then reactivated for the playoffs. Can you kind of speak to that, the business side? And then I believe you've signed, what, a one-year tender deal for this upcoming season?
Yes, sir. You know, I just let my agent, you know, take care of all that stuff. I just worry about ball.
Yeah, I mean, is it okay? No, that's definitely fair. Emmanuel Wilson joining us here on Box to Row. What about it? AJ Dillon goes down. Of course, Josh Jacobs was signed during the offseason. AJ Dillon goes down. You know, can you speak to how that affects the running back room, but then how it also affects you? You're in essence elevated as a second year player.
You know, AJ was a, you know, he's a big part of the team. You know, he was here for 5 years. So, you know, I can say losing him was, it's kind of, I ain't gonna say it's effective, but you know, he knows the whole offense. So learning from him and helping us out in the room was tremendously great for us. But, you know, we just still, you know, attack every day is like as he's still here, even though he's still here in the building.
What do you remember most? Let me start with playing at Johnson C. Smith. You were, I remember that year in 2019, you were ultra productive, the CIAA's Offensive Player of the Year. Speak to that in initially starting off at Johnson C. Smith in your hometown of Charlotte.
It was a crazy experience, really, because I didn't play my freshman year coming into college due to grades, but you know, my sophomore year, and that was my freshman year playing on the field. Just try to take advantage of every opportunities that I had out there, trying to learn from Coach Blunt, and just trying to attack days and really watch what I was eating. I was a vegan then, but ain't no vegan no more. Can't be a vegan.
Not in the league, right?
Yeah, can't.
Yeah, speak to that a little bit. And I mean, it's so many things in the National Football League, especially when you make the jump from D2 to the National Football League. You mentioned the nutritional part of this thing. The so many other things. Can you kind of speak to that? You had to put some weight on you a little bit, right?
Yeah, I did. Even at Fort Valley, you know, I just try to watch what I ate in the cafeteria. You know, they have fried chicken Wednesdays and everything like that. But still be trying to watch what I eat when I was in college. Transitioning to the league, really, with our nutrition program, I try to ask them what I can eat as far as, like, protein-wise, watching, like, calories and stuff like that. So I really just eat, like, salmon almost every day, really. So.
Now, Emmanuel, now you're from Charlotte, right? You're from the South. And all, how did you pass up on the fried chicken Wednesday? That's a staple in HBCUs, quite frankly.
So really sometimes they had it during lunch, and it was just one day at practice. I ate it right before practice, and when I went out there, I wasn't feeling too good, so I just told myself never to eat chicken no more.
So. I feel you. By the way, I'm a huge salmon fan, particularly grilled salmon is the absolute best. What led to the decision to transfer to Fort Valley State?
Really just to get out of Charlotte, honestly. Just a new start for myself. And I can say it was a grown man decision for myself, you know, just trying to stay home close to my mom. And I just let her know, like, I can't be home no more. So I wanted to get out of Charlotte and find a new home. So,
And of course, you went to perhaps the running back guru in Coach Gibbs. I mean, you look at what he was able to do at A&T, Tariq Cohen, and all of these guys. I mean, that I'm sure that had to factor into your decision as well.
I had started with Coach Flowers first. He was at Fort Valley first. You know, he took me there. You know, he took me under his wing. And he taught me a lot, really. You know, I grew up without my father. So Coach Flowers taught me a lot. And then learning from Coach Gibbs my senior year, it was tremendous. He taught me, like, far as pass protection, I got to, you know, shoot my hands, anchor down. I still talk to him to this day about that. And just he let me introduce me to Tariq Cohen, too. So I met Tariq and everything. He gave me some knowledge as well on the league and stuff. So it was a great experience learning from Coach Gibbs as well.
Couple of more thoughts with Emmanuel Wilson, running back for the Green Bay Packers, who joins us here on the program. Ironically, Coach Flowers is now back in Charlotte, where he's from, where he grew up, back there now. How much do you still kind of communicate with him in that program?
Yeah, I still talk to Coach Flowers. He texted me the other day congratulating me. Recently, he wanted me to come talk to his players and everything like that, but I told him I was in training camp. And recently, before training camp had started, I went to his camp that he had for, like, high school students, went out there, you know, coached up some kids, and really just was supposed to tell my story, but I had to go, had a little meeting that I had to get to with my agent. So I didn't get to, you know, express what I went through as far as being at Johnson C. Smith and how I grew up. So,
couple of last thoughts. What does it mean to you to be from an HBCU and representing in the National Football League as so many other players are currently? Maybe not like it was back in the day where it was so many, but there's still a good core of really good HBCU players playing in the league. And you're right there. You know you're going to play this year based upon the depth chart for one of the all-time great franchises in the Green Bay Packers.
Yes, sir. It means a lot just to represent HBCUs. It's just that, you know, for, you know, the players out there at the collegiate level, you can do it. Just take time, you know, continue to grind, and you put the numbers up, they'll come find you. But it's a great opportunity, and I'm proud to represent HBCUs.
Yeah, and then the Packers, the history there. I mean, when you talk about running back Jim Taylor and all of these, you know, guys that not only played the position, but just the Packers as an organization.
Yes, sir. It means a lot just to play for the G. You know, it's a lot of guys that played here and, you know, trying to live up to their standard.
Emmanuel Wilson, again, in his second season with the Green Bay Packers, formerly of Fort Valley State. He joins us here on Box to Row. I tell you what, Emmanuel, great job. Continued success in everything that you do. And good luck this season with the Packers.
Thank you.
That was a conversation with Packers running back Emmanuel Wilson. Let's keep things moving here on Box to Row. We're joined by a gentleman. As a matter of fact, he's in his fourth season as the head football coach at Vanderbilt. A huge win for the Commodores in overtime, as a matter of fact, over Virginia Tech at home on Saturday. Next up for the Commodores, Old Corn State comes to Nashville. Clark Lee joins us here on Box to Row. Coach Lee, welcome to the program.
Hey, great to be with you.
Great to be with you. Let me start here. That's a really big win. I know you now in your career, I know you had a big win over Florida going back a couple of years ago as the head coach there at Vanderbilt. Just your thoughts on the way your team played in coming away with that overtime victory over Virginia Tech.
played with a lot of heart, you know, sloppy in the third quarter, or else it could have been a better day. You know, we have a good team that, you know, we're not going to be a team that's going to be able to go out and play however we want to play. We got to be disciplined and detailed and execute, play together, play with spirit. And I thought on the whole for the first game, we did that, just, you know, cleaning up some of that execution. And, you know, you've got to have a killer instinct as a team. I mean, we got to keep a team pinned down when we have them down. Virginia Tech's good. They were able to fight back. We expected a counterpunch, but, you know, I was proud of the way the guys fought back ourselves and finished the game out. So it was a good way to start the season. It's just the first game, but, you know, we're going to take the opportunity to celebrate those moments when they come.
Yeah, what was it like in that overtime period? You get the, you know, of course, the first touchdown, then able to stop Virginia Tech. Matter of fact, you had backed them up a little bit, 4th and 11. Take us through what it was like immediately after the game. I'm sure it was maybe in some respects pandemonium there in your stadium for your fans.
A lot of happy people, you know, and a lot of reason to celebrate, you know, with our team on the field afterwards and with our fans. And then obviously in our locker room, all of it very special. And, you know, those are fleeting moments. I mean, they come and they go. You do the best you can to be in the moment with the people that you care about. And then it's, you know, kind of the challenge becomes how quickly you can turn the page and reset and set your, you know, focus on the next opponent, which is what we've needed to do this week. But I told the guys, you know, I'm proud that they're getting attention. They deserve attention. And I want us to learn how to balance the attention we're getting for something that we did versus the focus on what we need to do next. And that's kind of where our prep has been this week.
Hold the line for me 1 second, Coach Lee, because I want to talk with Coach Lee. There were a couple of plays in this game, especially in the fourth quarter. There was a missed field goal. And then, of course, in overtime is where the Commodores defeated Virginia Tech. And I want to ask him more about the program, including recruiting to a place like Vanderbilt, which has such high academic standards. Keep it locked. More with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee on the other side. This is your weekly edition of the Box to Row Blitz. I'm Donald Ware. Week one in HBCU football. First, I'm going to take you to Hampton, Virginia, for the matchup between Morgan State and Hampton, old CIAA and MEAC rivals. We're going to pick things up towards the latter part of the first quarter with Morgan leading 7-0 and Hampton driving.
QB Zealous gets a snap. Zealous gives it the tailback, searches straight ahead, looking for the end zone. Elijah Burris from 2 yards out.
And the Pirates knotted the game at 7 apiece. Let's move early to the second quarter. Now Morgan State with possession, looking to regain the lead.
Tom Smith gives to Jason Collins, breaks the tackle, 20, 15, 10, 5, see ya! JC to the house, Jason Collins.
From 41 yards, and the Bears led at that point 14-7. Both teams would trade rushing touchdowns in the second quarter. Miles Myrie from 16 yards out for the Bears extended the Bear lead to 20-7. Hampton would answer with a 33-yard touchdown run by Elijah Burris to pull to within 20-14 at halftime. Now, let me take you to early to the fourth quarter with the Bears clinging to a 23-21 lead. The Bears with possession of the football.
Now back J.J. Davis to the 5 to the doorstep.
Touchdown!
J.J. Davis.
That was the mentor, Lamont Germany, on WEAA in Baltimore. The Bears would hold on to defeat Hampton 30-28 and in back-to-back seasons, wins opening games on the road. Now to Tallahassee, Florida for a matchup between old SIAC and MEAC rivals as the Florida A&M Rattlers hosted South Carolina State. The fireworks took place in the second half. We're going to move to late in the third quarter with South Carolina State trailing 7-6 and possession.
Phoenix looking right. Throws it out there. KZ makes a move at the 5. KZ
Touchdown, Casey Adams, South Carolina State.
The conversion failed, but the Bulldogs led 12-7, and the Bulldogs looking for more early in the fourth quarter.
Shotgun formation. Josh is to his left. They give it to Josh again. He walks in. Touchdown, South Carolina State with 12:14 to go. Bulldogs 18, Florida A&M 7.
But the Rattlers responded.
Carter Johnson gets up, goes to the left. In motion, Richardson throws it out there wide open. Carter Johnson catches a touchdown.
From 7 yards out, and the Rattlers pulled to within 18-15, and the Rattlers were not done yet.
Richardson back to pass. Richardson got a man out there wide open. Touchdown, Florida A&M. Franklin walks in.
Missed coverage there by the Bulldogs, and nobody was over there. Two receivers over there. No South Carolina State guys.
Ernest Robinson, Bill Hamilton on the South Carolina State Bulldogs Football Radio Network. From 6 yards out was the game winner as the Rattlers defeated the Bulldogs 22-18. The Rattlers remain number one in both the HBCU coaches and media polls, are 2-0 on the season. Now I'm going to take you to Livingston, Alabama for the matchup between West Alabama and Miles. Let's pick things up in the fourth quarter with Miles trailing 13-9 and driving.
Pressure by West Alabama, throw toward the end zone, diving. Did he catch it? That's going to be a Miles College touchdown. Ivory with a pretty good ball right there as he was able to find his receiver, Jockel Fells. And Miles College takes the lead 15-13.
From 18 yards out. Now, let's fast forward to 4 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. Miles 15, West Alabama 13, and a 20-yard field goal attempt for West Alabama.
Good snap and a good hold. Guyton drills it home, and West Alabama, they're going to win it as they will best the Golden Bears of Miles College 16-15.
That was Will Atkinson on the West Alabama Sports Radio Network. Box to Row, the radio show, airs weekly on radio stations across the country, as well as on Sirius XM channels 142 and 84. To listen to the show or for more information, visit BoxToRow.com. Welcome back to Box to Row. We're talking with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee on the program. And Coach Lee, you're going fourth quarter. It's a tie ball game, 27 apiece. You're going for the win, and you missed the field goal. How do you take us through that, first of all, and then how you are able to get your guys to regroup again to score that touchdown on the initial possession in overtime?
Well, I think, we as humans, we want to always kind of build narrative around what we're experiencing. And I think there's a lot of negative narratives that you can come up with in that moment. Everything goes so fast. How skilled are you at letting it go and looking at the next thing you need to do? And that's to a credit to our team. That's what we did. You know, our kicker Brock, we love him. We have his back. I mean, he's going to hit a lot of game winners for us. He just missed that one. There are things that we probably could have done leading up to that kick that would have helped him. And that's learning for us, but ultimately we'll put him out there again. I was proud of the way the team had his back. And by the time we got to overtime, you know, the way our offense had driven the ball in the final two series. So that was a very important sequence. We had a touchdown tying drive. That was a great drive for us. We then went out and got a three and out on defense, and then returned a punt to the minus 48. So there were a lot of complementary elements to what we were doing. Then we drove the ball into field goal range, and had the chance at the game winner. I think by the time that we went to overtime, our team had reclaimed the confidence we needed to go finish the game out. And so you kind of had this feeling that, hey, we're about to go score. And once we did, as we were taking the field defensively, those guys certainly had that look in their eye that they were going to go finish the game, and they were able to do it.
Again, we're talking with Clark Lee, the head football coach of Vanderbilt, as he joins us here on Box to Row in his fourth season as the head coach. Diego Pavia, your quarterback. I mean, he was phenomenal. Didn't throw an interception. Couple of touchdowns. Very efficient in terms of his completion percentage. And he ran 404 yards and a touchdown. Speak to his play in this football game.
He's like the ultimate competitor, and not in a way that sometimes people paint themselves as a competitor and it lets them kind of fly off the handle every time something doesn't go their way. I mean, he has a real competitive process and a confidence about him that he approaches his work with every single day. I've never seen him have a bad day on the practice field, not in terms of the results, but in terms of representing himself in the competitive moment. And so he carries that with him on Saturday. Our kids believe in him and have a lot of confidence in him. And they enjoy having him be the quarterback of our team. And so all of that played out in the way our offense came together. And I thought played a really, you know, executed a game plan, played really effectively. That defense in the moment where we conceded the lead, you know, for the offense to go back on the field the next drive and go score to tie it. You know, we responded from that and were inspired by that energy and that that moment too. So Diego has a huge influence, as any quarterback does, on our team. And he happens to perfectly represent the program we want to be. I mean, he's smart, he's tough, and he's a guy that's never going to let go of the rope. And that's exactly what we want this program to look like.
And then Virginia Tech, I mean, to be able to shut down Bashal Tootin and that Virginia Tech running attack, you limited them to just 75 yards rushing.
A credit to our defensive front. I thought we really defended well between the tackles. And, you know, I think we forced Virginia Tech to the perimeter. And, you know, unfortunately, we conceded some yards out there in the air. But on the whole, the run game was kept in check. We knew that was going to be important to winning. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that an effective run game is like a good body puncher as a boxer. And when you, on a hot day in game one, when you're absorbing those body punches in the first quarter, they hurt you then, but they show up later. And the fact that we were able to kind of get out of that kind of game was helpful to us, I think, in the finish. And certainly I felt like our offense was able to generate some of that running game that also allowed us to kind of break through there at the end too. So again, a good team win and, you know, one that we were excited to celebrate. Now we're excited to kind of, step into the next climb here that we face this week.
Clark Lee, the head football coach at Vanderbilt, joins us here on the program for a couple of more moments. Can I take you back just slightly to last year? Because, I mean, you're playing in the toughest conference in America. That 2022 season, you had 5 wins, and then you had 2 last year. Kind of take us through, you know, last year, and obviously now you get a good win for this year, but kind of what was it going on with, you know, maybe with the program on last year?
Well, we had 2 wins our first year, and that team was pretty much all inherited, which, you know, again, I appreciated all those guys and the effort they put in. We just weren't very good, and we weren't good enough to, you know, we lost in the opening game against East Tennessee State that year. We battled back 2 comfort behind wins. One was at Colorado State. One was against UConn at home. That's where we were. That was our starting point. From year one to year two, we made significant progress. And we were able to get to 5, winning 2 games in conference late in the season, and just missed, you know, bowl eligibility. What the message that sent to me was, hey, we're really close. Let's double down on our systems and, you know, continue on this march. And I didn't recognize a need for course change in certain areas. And that didn't really hit me in the face until, you know, we're about midway through last season. And it just, you know, the identity of the team never came into focus. I wasn't able to do enough to kind of get them to overperform where we were. And the wheels kind of came off. And so it was important heading into the off season that I just kind of take a full 360 degree look at our program, where we are. There's a lot of really good things that we had done that we wanted to maintain, and foundation that had been set that we wanted to build upon. But there are also things that we needed to shift and change. And that included the way we trained our team. That included our tactical systems. That included some of our players too. And so we committed to do it and we did it, you know, and that doesn't mean, you know, look, we, again, a lot of it makes sense on the back end of a week one win, an exciting win, but you know, we were margins away from ending up on the other side of that game on Saturday. I think it's more about just knowing that we're doing the right things the right way with the right people, that in time, when you stay in the fight in that manner, you know, the results are ultimately going to reflect the effort, the investment, the love that we put into this. I learned a lot about where we were and where we weren't after last season. That helped me set a course forward that hopefully gives way to a season this year that shows the progress that I think that we've made here internally. And then we just continue that, you know, forward. But certainly last year was painful, but also important when it comes to, again, setting the course for what's next.
Duke, Stanford, Vanderbilt, Howard University, like you're talking about some of the more elite schools from an academic standpoint. When it comes to recruiting, some of the guys you're trying to get in the program, is it more difficult to recruit because of those kind of academic standards?
You know, I think that it creates a certain filter that I think can actually help you build a better football team. So I don't see those. In fact, the reason I came here and took this job, it's my alma mater and this is my hometown, but I believe in the product of these kind of places where a young person can come and get a holistic experience that actually gives way to a lifelong journey of prosperity, and prosperity not just being financial, but you know, someone who has autonomy and recognizes their ability to have impact and to serve community and, you know, to chase passion. Like that's, you know, that's what we're into here. You know, I sometimes, you know, we're, you know, certain players are eliminated from our board because they haven't shown that they value education and maybe they're, you know, they're not performing at a level in the classroom that is going to be successful here. But we also don't recruit a team full of valedictorians. We have guys from all different kinds of backgrounds and different, you know, demonstrated abilities in the classroom that come here and do really well because this is a place that, you know, is supportive. And so we're a smaller campus that, you know, your professors know you by name and you know, we've demonstrated success, you know, not just graduating our players, but, you know, graduating them into careers that they go on to do big things. So I see it as an advantage. I think in some ways, you know, we have to stay committed to that, even though the transfer portal and NIL have shifted some of the strategies around, like, you know, player acquisition and player retaining. But for us, it's got to be someone who's interested in the holistic experience. And if they are, then what better place to do that than at Vanderbilt, where you're playing in the SEC, you got a top 15 education, and you're doing it in Nashville, Tennessee. We think that's a pretty unique combination of factors that make us one of one, you know, and as long as I'm doing my job on the football end of things and making football important here and demonstrating progress with respect to a player steps in our building and he knows he's getting better day in, day out with training, with nutrition, with the tactical design, with the teaching. If I'm doing that, then this becomes a great place to have a great football career, to go on and be a pro for a really long time, to then launch into your long-term impact in life. And that's kind of the design and the vision for what Vanderbilt football can be.
Thank you for that, Coach Lee. Last thought, your thoughts on Alcorn State, your next opponent.
Well, first of all, I've got a ton of respect for that program, and they've had some successful seasons here of late. And you know, my first kind of experience with Alcorn State was growing up in Nashville watching Steve McNair, you know, and just what a legend and what a first class human who really was a kind of an idol of mine. You know, I was a kid here watching him play, and so I always kind of knew about Alcorn and followed Alcorn because of Steve and his legacy here. You know, obviously they had a disappointing game last weekend, but this is a team that has the ability. I mean, they are disruptive defensively. They know how to, you know, keep from giving up the big play. We're going to have to work to find our explosives on offense. Offensively, they have skilled players that they have unique design to get on the balls, and they have three quarterbacks that they play that all three have the ability to throw the long ball, but also can hurt you with their legs too. This is going to be a game that we're going to have to play with discipline. We're going to have to play to our identity. You know, we're going to have to force them to go the long, hard way on offense. I mean, you know, we got to correct some of the explosives that we gave up against Virginia Tech, because I know they're going to be hungry to play. And it's a proud program that, again, has a good team and has had success here in the recent past. And, you know, we'll have our work cut out for us.
Clark Lea, again, in his fourth season as the head football coach at Vanderbilt. The Commodores 1-0 on the young season, going to host Alcorn State on Saturday. Coach Lea, we really appreciate the time. Continued success to you and the Commodores.
Hey, really great to be with you. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate it, Coach Lea. More of Box to Row is up next.
Home sales are down 31% across America, and mortgage rates are on the rise. If your home is not selling, you need to call our experts right now at the Quick Cash Hotline. We have investors ready to pay you cash for your property, regardless of the condition it's in. Most of our closings can happen in about 7 days. You don't have to worry about a buyer getting approved. You don't have to worry about showing your home. One simple call right now. Just pick up the phone and call us. I'll give you the number in a second. We will negotiate with you a price to buy your home. It's that simple. If you're ready to sell your home right now, any home, any condition, and you don't want to put money into it, no problem. We'll buy it from you. Call right now. It's a free call.
800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. 800-470-7113. That's 800-470-7113.
It's Donald Ware, from the press box to press row.
We're going to break down the HBCU National Game of the Week momentarily. Also, our other HBCU National Player of the Week, in addition to North Carolina Central running back Jamari Taylor, is Virginia Union running back Jada Byers. Unbelievable. Another 200-plus yard performance in the whopping victory by the Panthers over Kentucky State. He had over 200 yards rushing, and it is the eighth time in Jada Byers' career that he's had over 200 yards rushing. To learn more about Jada Byers, to learn more about Jamari Taylor, log on to our website, BoxToRow.com. Box to Row's countdown to 20. Our listen back today is with one of the greatest cornerbacks to ever play in the National Football League, Darryl Green of the then Washington Redskins. He joined us back in 2016. I want to ask you this, because you played at a smaller school, at Texas A&I, and you, like our HBCUs, you have an affinity for HBCUs. As I mentioned, you were part of the HBCU Bowl, part of our All-American banquet back in 2011. Your son attended Southern. Talk about the affinity that you have for HBCUs.
Well, growing up in Houston, Texas Southern, my brother graduated Texas Southern. I actually tried to go to Texas Southern. They said I couldn't play and I was too little. That's a whole other story. But
wish they had that one back, right?
Yeah, that was us. So we could talk about that a long time. But my daughter, my sister graduated. She's a school teacher. She graduated at Texas Southern. My brother graduated pharmacy school, Texas Southern. My wife and I graduated, finished our degree, our undergrad degree at St. Paul's College of Lawrenceville, Virginia. And my son, after graduating University of Virginia, he actually did a year at Southern. So we have, you know, a deep history. You know, I grew up in the neighborhood right next to Texas Southern for a while. So, we spent many years in those communities, spent many years after that around Tennessee State, around different Howard University.
In the National Football League with one team, the Washington Redskins, you retired at the age of 42, still playing at a very high level. What do you remember most about your career with the Redskins?
I always was very fortunate in that I had a right a right thinking. Watching Redskins was a job to me. Remember, I was born in 1860, and I started football actually in 11th grade. So I'm not from this generation. I'm not from the Madden games, ESPN, NFL Network, Monday night, but not Thursday night, you know, Saturday night. I'm not from this generation and from this world. I was a kid who really put a big emphasis on having fun as a kid. 1, 2, 3, red light, hopscotch, tag, hide and go seek, you know, touch on the street, tackle on the grass, and football, basketball on a bicycle rim, tie a hammer to a tree. So I didn't grow up wanting to be a pro football player, and that didn't even seem realistic if it was, because I was 150 pounds when I went to college as a walk-on at an NAIA school. Dropped out for a year, came back, basically a year and a half, came back after that, and played three more seasons, and was a first-round draft pick. But I wasn't my story is a little different, and which made my approach and then my Christian faith.
Box to Rose countdown to 20 and a listen back to our conversation with Pro Football Hall of Famer Darryl Green. As far as an HBCU national game of the week, it's really hard to determine for week two what a game of the week would be. There were so many really good football games last week. We mentioned the Florida A&M South Carolina State game. We previewed the North Carolina Central Alabama State game. There were so many. Instead of picking a game, let's kind of look at this schedule in week two at some of the more prominent games. Some of them, this is more, I would say, week two is more of a rivalry, the rivalry kind of matchups in some of these in-state games. And I think what the cool thing really is when you're an HBCU at the FCS level, you play up. And you get hundreds of, generally, when you play up an FBS opponent, depending upon the opponent, you get hundreds of thousands of dollars in guaranteed money to play these football games in most respects. And I think the cool thing, and what we're going to see this weekend, is to turn that back around and pay a Division II HBCU to come play you. And a lot of and I think that's really cool. So then the Division II school, and it's really, you're only giving that school about 10% of what you would get in terms of an FCS HBCU playing up. So you've got some great in-state rivalries, right? Miles and Alabama State play. Remember, this was a game that Miles defeated Alabama State on last year. Miles is coming off a really a good game, couldn't close West Alabama out, who's one of the more prominent members in terms of Division II football, had them lost in a 20-yard field goal by 1 point. And Alabama State coming off that tough loss to North Carolina Central with no Andrew Boddy in this football game. Even though I wouldn't consider this one of the more prominent games, I mean, it's cool to see Alabama A&M hosting Kentucky State. You know, an intriguing game is Rice hosting Texas Southern. Now, I'm not sure how good Rice is. I know Texas Southern had a really nice win last week against Prairie View A&M, and so you've got that game in Houston. That should be a game that should have a pretty good amount of fans in the stands. Another game, maybe not as prominent, but still, you're talking about a Jackson State hosting a Lane, right? You're talking not a game, another game that's not as prominent, not a rivalry, but Southern is hosting Savannah State. Looking at the schedule, Grambling State is hosting Tuskegee, right? You've got some of these games. Let's look at some of the other games as I look at the schedule. A&T is hosting Winston-Salem State. Now, this is a game that is being played for the first time in 14 years. It used, going back in the day, it used to be a rivalry, and then the MEAC, like the early part of the 2000, discouraged these type of games from being played because the MEAC wanted to be seen more as a prominent FCS or 1AA conference at that time. And really, at that time, A&T had two Division II teams or schools. It played North Carolina Central in the Aggie Eagle Classic and then also played Winston-Salem State. So that game sort of went away in terms of it being a game every year that A&T hosted. And then it was kind of on and off. Remember, the Winston-Salem State Rams were in the MEAC or were to be members of the MEAC, and then that fell through, and so this game was no longer really scheduled. Let's take a look at the schedule at some of the other games. Norfolk State and Virginia State. Now, that would have been the HBCU National Game of the Week I would have looked at. Norfolk State 0-2, coming off the big loss to East Carolina. However, it's a Norfolk State team that forced East Carolina into six turnovers last week. And remember, took Florida A&M to the brink 2 weeks ago before falling to the Rattlers. And it's a Virginia State team that's coming off, you know, a really big win in that Black College Football Hall of Fame Classic up in Canton, Ohio. So that should be a really good game. An in-state rivalry, an old CIAA rivalry. Another old CIAA rivalry in-state. Hampton hosting Virginia Union. Going back a couple of years ago, I believe Virginia Union defeated Hampton. I had a chance to see Hampton play. Look, Jada Byers is one of the best running backs in the country, including all divisions. He had in excess of 200 yards last week. And Hampton gave up a lot, what, about 180 yards or so rushing to Morgan State last week. That's going to be a tough day for Hampton in terms of trying to stop Jada Byers. Looking at some of the other more prominent games, I mean, Fayetteville State's got a game against UNC Pembroke. The two schools are separated by about 40 minutes or so. You know, that should be awesome. So you've got some games. You know, the Citadel, South Carolina State is at the Citadel. So there are some games. There's no game that jumps out to me. North Carolina Central is hosting Elon. You know, another in-state battle. I wouldn't call it a rivalry, but an in-state battle. Townsend and Morgan State, that's a rivalry type of game, although Townsend has dominated that series. But Morgan played an exceptional game on last year against Townsend. That game is going to be at Townsend. So you've got some, you know, Florida Memorial and Edward Waters, right? Jacksonville is where Edward Waters is. Florida Memorial is in Miami. So you've got a couple of games, and you've got a conference game. Clark Atlanta is hosting Allen. Big time win by Clark Atlanta last week over Fort Valley State, where David Wright, the quarterback, he transferred from Allen to Clark Atlanta. Now he's facing his old team. If anything, that's the game of the week. I think if you look at the schedule, that would be the game of the week. I don't know what to make of Allen. New coaching staff, I'm sure a new roster, and hadn't played a game to this point. Meanwhile, David Wright, 7 touchdowns to 0 interceptions, threw for, 423 yards last week in the victory over Fort Valley State. An interesting game. Tennessee State is at North Dakota State. So you've got some games. You know, more now that I look at the schedule a little bit more, you know, that I would say, if anything, that Clark Atlanta and Allen game would constitute the HBCU National Game of the Week for a couple of reasons. Again, Teddy Keaton leaves Allen to go to Clark. Big win for Clark last week over Fort Valley State. And now you've got the situation where Allen comes to Clark, where Teddy Keaton is the coach, where David Wright is the quarterback. And so I think that is really your HBCU National Game of the Week. Don't really know what to make of Allen coming into this season. I know that Clark Atlanta's got David Wright, and you've got David Wright. You're doing something right there. Look, my time is about up. I thank you for yours. Thank you to Clark Lee. Also, thank you to Emmanuel Wilson for his time, for joining us today here on Box to Row. For more information on the program, the HBCU scoreboard, the HBCU coaches and media polls, log on to our website, boxtorow.com. And always remember to support those that support Yo Box to Row is produced by DW Communications.
That car and driving make you feel some type of way. That custom writing make you feel some type of way. Deep John Wick got me feeling some type of way. Is it cause my homies rich, you feel some type of way? Some type of way, make you feel some type of way.